Welcome to the Hotline, the podcast. Kevin Acey. I am at Petco Park. I am the beat writer for the Union Tribune covering the Padres. My boss, Jay Posner. You're just down the block. Just down the road.
I am, and it's good to know that you're back on the beat. You know, after this,
after that long vacation
that you had, stranding poor Jeff Sanders out there for, what was it, two entire games?
Yes, 2 days in Seattle. And I would like to say, the first one, certainly eventful, Nelson Lamet, a no-hitter, the second longest bid this season. And then yesterday, well, I don't know, Tatis homers, Mejia homers, and Will Myers matches him with a couple misplaced.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was, we'll go back to, we should go back to Tuesday. We'll mention Padres are playing the Rockies 4 games starting tonight. Both teams have been horrendous in the last 6 weeks or so. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Tuesday night, Nelson Lamet, I was a little surprised. Number one, I was surprised he was throwing a no-hitter because it just felt like in the first couple innings he was having trouble. I don't even know if he knew where the ball was going, but he had like, at one point, I think it was four walks and five strikeouts. And we'll preface all this by saying the Mariners are not a very good offense, but you can't take away from the way Lamet straightened himself out. And all of a sudden he's got a no-hitter, but his pitch count's rising. Hadn't thrown more than, I believe, 88 pitches in any start this year since coming back from Tommy John, and I think he was at about 84 maybe after 6 innings, and he went back out for the 7th, and I have to say I was surprised by that. I don't know how you felt about it. Unless the plan before the game was to have him go more into the 90s, it just felt kind of weird that he would go back out there. It wasn't like he was going to finish 9. Was I the only one surprised, or did you kind of expect that they would allow him to sort of push on for one more inning?
And since I wasn't there, and I haven't seen any reaction to it, my only was that, yeah, let's see what he can do. That's sort of been the take with in these types of situations, as long as it's not detrimental to the health of a pitcher, and also for Nelson Lamet. That game summed up Nelson Lamet. I mean,
right.
That was incredible. His stuff is ace stuff. His control, his command is not ace stuff. Every once in a while, he's gonna put together a better game than that. I'm not saying a no-hitter. He's going to have a night where he goes 9, he gives up, he walks a guy and gives up a home run, and he gives up 2 runs on one hit. That's going to be what Nelson Lamet is capable of doing. He's a better Luis Perdomo. Don't know how you feel about that comparison, but he's a better Luis Perdomo. The capability to be, a guy who, gosh, if Nelson Lamet's your number 3 or 4 starter, and every once in a while he's giving you a gem like that, I think that's fantastic. I guess anymore, what Andy does, I always wait to hear what was Andy Green's thinking on it, because there's always some, it's just, I shouldn't say never, there's a couple times where he said, I blew it. It's always something, and I'll be, since I wasn't there, I have not familiarized myself with his thinking there.
Right. And again, it could have been where they felt how he was throwing and everything that he could go one more. I was a little surprised to see him wind up over 100, just with how careful that they've been, not only with Lamet, but with Paddock and with other guys as well this year. And he did throw well in that last inning. He did seem a little bit like he was laboring. I think he got bailed out. The last batter swung at a pitch that bounced like 6 feet in front of home plate, if I'm remembering that at bat, but he threw, I think he got him, ended up with his, 12th strikeout on the last batter, and he's still throwing like 95, 96 to the last,
And here's what I can assure you. Here's something I always know, like unequivocally, and anybody who would doubt this based on what they've proved, to me it's proof. If a guy is going back out there, it's because they believe it is not going to be a detriment to his health. Because
sure.
That has been paramount to their whole thing.
Right,
like, you
right.
know. Health is number one, and as well it should be, considering all the other things we've talked about of what this season is. So I thought that was, that was like, sometimes Nelson Lamet has a game where he's completely wild, and you go, what a Nelson Lamet game. Then Nelson Lamet, like in 2017, had quite a few games where, that was really good. Good command, his stuff. Well, that was a Nelson Lamet game. This game combined all of Nelson Lamet.
Right, and then even allowing him to finish the inning after giving up the hit, a couple hits was interesting, but he did finish it, and so we, maybe it was one of those, we've talked about it many times and been criticized, at least I've been criticized for saying that sometimes they're just trying to find out about guys, and I think that might have been a case where they were trying to find out something about Lamet, and he showed something there, and now we'll see him, I guess his next start will be probably Monday now against Tampa, a good team from the American League, so Be curious how he fares in that, but we can get to that next week. Yesterday just seemed like sort of more of the same from what we've seen these last few weeks. Joey Lucchesi wasn't bad. He wasn't good. The final numbers were okay. But, you know, again, wasn't helped by some of the defense behind him. Just one of those games. And the offense, I don't know. I mean, what are you going to say about the offense? I mean, Tatis almost hit one out of the stadium to lead off the game. And then they got some guys on. They couldn't bring him in. You know, you don't want to see Hedges up with the bases loaded and two out, kind of the last guy there, and he ends up popping up. Mejia hit the home run to get him even, and then they have another bad, sort of a bad break defensively, and then a bad break where Hedges made a great play coming out from behind the plate, throws to third base, and Malik Smith was safe by, of course Mark Wenger would blow the call. Wegner would blow the call because he was only standing 1 foot from where that was made. You said you wanted to talk about umpires last time and I cut you off. And that was just, I think Hedges made the right play there trying to get the guy, and almost any other runner, he gets him. And, the guy was safe by a couple inches. So it happens. And they couldn't get a hit to save their lives.
Couldn't get a hit. They got a couple home runs, and there you have it. If you were going to say, I need one sentence to sum up the Padres' offense this season, it would be that.
Yeah.
Got a couple home runs, but nothing else.
Right, right. And so it ends up they are now 7-16 since the break. But since since June 30th, and I picked that date for a reason, which you'll see in a second with the Rockies, since June 30th, they are 10-21. And that is actually two games better than the Rockies in that time span. The Rockies were 44-39 going into their game on June 30 against the Dodgers. They're 8-23 since then. They lost six in a row going into the break. They're 8-17 coming out of the break. They've had a couple six-game losing streak before the break, another one after the break. They're now 52-62. The Padres are 52-61. Their run differentials are almost even. So I guess what we're saying is this weekend we're seeing a couple of really mediocre, and that's putting it kindly, teams at Petco. The Rockies do have a couple of starters, I will say, before I turn it back over to you. But John Gray has a WAR of 4.1 and Herman Marquez at 3.6. So they do have two starters who have pitched pretty well. The Padres will see Gray tonight, and Marquez, I believe, pitches on Sunday. Just to compare, the top Padres starter in terms of WAR is Chris Paddock at 2.0, 2.2, depends on which site you look at on which day, I think. Their rotation is what this week, Kevin? Lauer goes tonight?
Lauer tonight, Paddock against Freeland tomorrow, Cal Quantrill against Freeland tomorrow night. Chris Paddock is on Saturday. We're not sure what is happening with the Rockies, where they're going to go to the bullpen game or what their situation is. And then on Sunday, the Padres have a TBD, and that is likely a bullpen game because I don't see any other option. That's just what they've been doing, and I don't see them inclined to call somebody up. So Herman Marquez will face the Padres bullpen on Sunday. So Lauer, Quantrill, Paddock, bullpen.
Right. Okay. So we have
there you go.
We have that, and I always enjoy when the Rockies are here because I enjoy guys like Arenado and Story are always are fun to watch. I mean, you talk about left sides of the infield in the National League West, and you have Arenado and Story, and you have Justin Turner and Corey Seager, and then the guy we want to talk about for the rest of the show is Fernando Tatis with Manny Machado. Tatis is about to qualify officially, Kevin, as in the terms of stats.
Right. Like to say, what do they say? Qualify for the batting title. That just means that he's averaging 3.1 plate appearances per game his team has played. That's what a qualifier is. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is six shy today of that. And then obviously with every game, you got to get some more plate appearances. But based on the fact that he gets a minimum of four and quite often five plate appearances a game, I would say by the end of the weekend, Fernando Tatis Jr. will be a qualifier. And that's significant because then we don't need any more qualifiers to be able to talk about him. Like, if he qualified, nope, he's a qualifier. Here's a guy who, Jay, some of the numbers are all time. You know, very few people have the power speed numbers that he has this year. He's second to Ryan Reynolds among rookies in both average and on-base percentage. He leads all rookies in slugging percentage and OPS, and that includes Pete Alonso, who has 36 home runs. No, 37.
37.
He hit 37th yesterday. Yeah. The same day Tatis hit his 21st.
37 homers, and Tatis still has a better slugging percentage because of the 21 homers. He's got 12 doubles, 5 triples. So I know you're writing about this, so give people a preview. I think the story will probably come out about the time that the podcast does, but what can we look for in the story about Tatis today?
You know, the fact that he is, reason of the milestone, the fact that he's becoming a qualifier, and look, there are 39 games left in the Padres season. Figure Tatis will start, 48 of those? So there's a ways to go. Like, right now, historically, there are, I think, 3 players since 1970. It might be 4, but like Ryan Braun, Mark McGwire, Albert Pujols, and Aaron Judge in terms of, like, OPS as rookies, right?
Right.
That are better than him, okay? No, he's got 49 starts or 49 games to go. But the thing about Fernando Tatis Jr. is the consistency. Like, unless there's another injury, right, which he obviously, what we thought was a detriment to his rookie of the year candidacy, maybe helped him. Gave him a 34-game rest. But every time we think, maybe the guy's going to hit the rookie wall, he just jumps right over it. Remember when this last in-depth story, and this one I just need to tell you as my boss, this one won't be as in-depth. The last time we were talking about Fernando Tatis specifically for any length of time on the podcast, and that I wrote about him, was coming out of Miami. Fernando Tatis in the middle of July, 2 games in a row without a hit. He also committed a couple errors. I think it was 4 errors in 3 games. And a lot of strikeouts, which has been a season-long theme. But everybody strikes out, as you and I were talking about earlier today.
Right.
But it's like, oh, no, and you know what? I'll tell you what, that just sort of exacerbated in my mind. You know, he looked tired, some of the body language, right? He's getting the shoulder iced. I was starting to notice that more. Like, oh, man, 2 games in a row. Do you know he's never gone 3, Jay? And do you know that since that day, July 17th, the second of those 2 hitless games, he's hit in 16 of 17. He's riding an 11-game hit streak now. The kid does not slump. And I think that is why we could be confident that it's probably a 2-horse race, maybe a 3-horse race, Jay, do you think, for the rookie of the year in the National League?
Yeah, I would say right now we're looking at 3. You've got Tatis and Alonso are the obvious 2 candidates among hitters. And Tatis has right now a 987 OPS. Alonso's at 958. If you look at adjusted OPS 159 to 152. If you look at runs created plus, weighted runs created plus on Fangraphs, that's 155, 149. I mean, Tatis has an advantage basically in all the categories with the exception of home runs and RBI, and that's obvious. I mean, Alonso, more of a power hitter, and he also hits in the 3 spot in the order, and Tatis leads off. So, but a lot, Tatis an advantage everywhere. Looking at WAR, which I was doing today, both of them are at 4.1. That's according to Baseball Reference. And again, that's, you know, Tatis has played 36 fewer games than Alonso. Mm-hmm. So you figure if they're going to continue at the pace that they're doing, then Tatis is going to pull away there. The other guy to consider and deserves strong consideration, I mean, he's been really good, is Mike Soroka, the pitcher for the Braves. He's at a 4.0 WAR, 20 starts, a 10-2 record for whatever that's worth, but a 2.45 ERA and an adjusted ERA of 186, which is outstanding. So I don't think you can discount him, especially he plays for a very good team, which, you know, some voters seem to factor in. Otherwise, Mike Trout would be the MVP every single year. But Soroka's the other guy that I think, and again, Brian Reynolds has been outstanding for the Pirates. I've seen him in person a couple times, and he was impressive. And then you get down, Paddock is probably, 5-6 somewhere in the voting there. But I think we're looking at a 3-man race right now, and I would make Tatis the favorite, and Alonso and Soroka, sort of right behind him. at this point. And again, we've still got, you know, almost 40 games for all of them to go.
Another point that I'm making in the story, and I think is important to keep this all sort of in perspective, is Rookie of the Year. I mean, of all the awards, a lot of guys you've never heard of that won Rookie of the Year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's important to a lot of fans, and obviously the Tatis would be very important to him. In the big picture, it doesn't mean anything, but, you know, it would be nice, I'm sure, for a lot of people to be able to celebrate something like that. And especially, and I think, especially Tatis.
I'm using it, the perspective of, I mean, a guy like Brian Reynolds, like, when I covered the Dodgers, Todd Hollinsworth won Rookie of the Year for the Dodgers, okay?
Right.
Todd Hollinsworth. Mike Piazza had won it 2 years earlier, 3 years earlier. That's a big deal, right, in terms of when you look back in history. Brian Reynolds could well be the leader in Rookie of the Year candidacy right now, but he's not, because you've got Tatis and Alonso doing historic things.
Right. So, no, I mean, Brian Reynolds is a really good player. He's a really good player, right? Better player than Todd Hollinsworth was as a...
there you go. That's why I picked Hollinsworth, because I knew about it.
Sure.
And I believe... It actually, this year, winning the Rookie of the Year, like, so many years, we're not even questioning. Like, Tatis could have missed 80 games, and with these numbers,
right,
be the runaway
right.
Rookie of the Year. But this is one heck of a year. And Soroka snuck up, and heck, you're talking about a guy like Chris Paddock, who is not. He doesn't have a shot at this point, I guess, considering who he has to pitch against probably the rest of the way. If he goes 6-0 with a 0.5 ERA, we'll change our tune. But Chris Paddock's having a pretty darn good year. He's not going to be even, considered. He'll be named on a lot of people's ballots because you vote 10 deep. But it's a one-year award for a kid who has a long career ahead of him.
Right.
That's
and
what
I,
it is.
I think I will just leave it with this. I think the best thing about Fernando Tatis is that we, and by that I mean all people who either, follow the Padres as fans, as media, just, live in the city, whatever it is, we get to see this guy every single day. And I've said that before. And I just, as a fan, that's one of those things where, we haven't had that kind of guy on the Padres as a city to watch. And now you have Tatis and Machado as well, as guys that you get to watch them every single day. And I think that, we shouldn't take that for granted. And, we'll get back to talking wins and losses at another point, but I think just getting to see Tatis and again Machado every single day is something that we should welcome.
That's a great point in so many ways, and one of them is like what you were talking about earlier. Like, I know you're coming out as a paying customer two of these 4 days, and Story, Arenado, Machado, and Tatis on the same field right now. There aren't going to be too many ballparks around the country tonight that have that many players on the field that, like, there's a potential every play for something special to happen. That's pretty cool.
Right.
The other thing is, remember when Tatis came up and he started out pretty well? And the sentiment you just said was the sentiment that a lot of fans had, because the Padres hadn't, started so hot yet, right? I'm talking pre, them being in first place for a few days there, right? And challenging for the wild card. And I think I remember the sentiment of a lot of fans being, well, at least we have Tatis this year, and that there was something to be appreciative of. That now we seem to, rightfully so, it's been a long time since they've won, gotten lost in the wins and losses, which, look, that's super important. But the big picture here, it's a great point. I mean, to be able to come and watch it, like I'm telling you, I've got the prostate of a 70-year-old man, Jay. I do not leave my seat when Fernando Tatis is coming up that half inning.
No, I mean, I plan that. No, when I'm in my seat, I am always conscious of when to leave the seat and knowing who's coming up in the next inning. And the other thing about it is, of course, you always hate to leave when the Padres are on defense as well, because you never know what you're going to – you almost have a chance of seeing something more spectacular from him and Machado defensively even. So that it absolutely factors in, and especially with some of the long lines at Petco, but we're not going to go there. we'll leave it there. There'll be four good games. Well, maybe not good games, but four games at Petco this weekend with the Padres and the Rockies. And then a good team comes in next week with Tampa, but we will get to that when you and I talk again on Monday here, Kevin.
I look forward to that, but I do look forward to these four games that have the potential to have many exciting things happen within them. Thank you for that, Jay.
Very good way to put it, and have a good weekend, everyone.